Today's daf in Masechet Yomah, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Yud. And the last thing that we learned was this fascinating argument here. According to Reish Lakish, he assumed that the reason that the Beis HaMikdash, when rebuilt by Ezra, did not have Hashras HaShchinah, was because of the fact that nobody really responded to the opportunity to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Had everyone come up, then everything would have been different. Rabbi Yochanan told him that that's not true, and that there was no possible way that there could be Hashras HaShchinah in the second Beis HaMikdash because it was built by the Bnei Yefet. And it had to be built, even though Yafta Elohim LeYefet, the second Beis HaMikdash, was wonderful, and it was zocheh to build it, it was very beautiful. But Yishkon Bo'al HaShem, the Shekhinah can only be Shaira in a Beis HaMikdash that's built by Bnei Shem, and therefore was Shaira in the Beis HaMikdash of Shlomo HaMelech, and that's from Bnei Shem. That was the last thing that we had learned. Now this brings us to the second line in today's daf, because the assumption is that Yaft Elohim LeYefet is a reference to Persia. And do we really know that Persia is actually Yefet? So that doesn't seem to be so clear. Asks the Gemara today, how do we know that? Uparsoi minolon, where do we get the idea that the Persians come from Paras? Answers the Gemara, this is going to take us a bit afield into understanding the various psukim in the parsha that describes the way that the Shivim Umais split from Nayach. So it says over there, Bnei Yefet, when it goes through the Shem, Ham, and Yefet children, it says Bnei Yefet is Gomer, Umagog, Umadai, V'Yavan, V'Tuval, Umeshech, V'Tiras. So now we have to figure out who these people are. So generally speaking, we understand that the Yefet area, if we split up the globe, we understand that the Ham area was the Africa, basically all of those areas. From Mitzrayim down, we trace those. We know those are all African Medinot. And when it comes to Bnei Yefet, that area was the area that roughly corresponds to Europe today. And the area of Shem, that was the area that's basically the Middle East and so on. So just taking a general look at things. So now taking a look at Bnei Yefet. So Gomer, Gomer ze Germania, I should say. This is a reference to Germany. And so that would be the entire area that is the various German tribes that settled there. Magog, this is a little bit of a problem, I'm sure, because you remember that the Gemara in Megillah says that Germania is Germania shel Edom. And over here it says that Germania comes from Paras. But remember that it also says Hine Mital HaShamayim is a reference to Italia Shel Yavan, that this is also given to Edom, right? And what is Italia Shel Yavan? Where Yavan, for sure, is from Yefes. So where do we get the idea that this was a gift to Edom? So then that obviously means that Germania Shel Edom, that we're referring to, is when Edom settled into that area that was originally called Germania, that had come from Yavan, in the same way that Rome obviously became fundamental to Italy, was no longer called Bnei Shem, and is considered to be from Edom. So even though that area is Italia Shel Yavan, it was given to Edom to take over. So if that's the case, it's probably the same thing, I would assume, that the Gemara means when it says Germania Shel Edom. Okay, so anyway, this Gomer is the original Germania, which is from Yefet. Magog refers to Candia. Is it by Sibarnea's not with us today here? So I guess we scared him away. Okay, I warned him yesterday. We're gonna need his input. Okay, so Germania, again, the idea of it's relating to modern Germany is Nogea, interestingly, in a number of places, because many Rishonim learn that we're going to be getting into in Negoyim, that over there we talk about different skin colors. And the Germani is the very light-skinned, blonde-haired color that is Nogea, the halachas of Negoyim, as we'll see. And it's contrasted with Kush, which is black skin. So the very white skin is Germani, which is mashma that it's part of the that whole racial typing of the Hitler type, racial typing of the, you know, the light-skinned and blonde hair, classic supposed Germani. Okay, I mean, not all the Rishonim agree that Germani means a German over there. The Rambam actually learns Germani comes from Gorem, Gorem meaning bone, so bone color, meaning light skin. Okay, but in any event, it may well be that there was an intermixing of Edom and Poras in Germania. So Magog refers to Candia. I'm assuming that now that Barnea heard our comment, he decided to come in. So it's possibly, Candia today is a way that people call Crete. Maybe it's referring to Crete. Modai could mean literally Modai, which is what Media. Yavon refers to the Macedonian area, which even today, they just, I think just recently, there was a big court case. I think the World Court decided that Macedonia has the right to call itself Macedonia. So the country of Macedonia, but it's referring obviously to that whole region. Tuval refers to Beit Unaiki. Now that's not so clear what exactly Beit Unaiki, and but Pashtas, Tuval is, even though the Abarbanel learns Tuval is the area of Spain, the Pashtas is that it's a part of Turkey. Am I correct there, Barnea? Do you have that information?
I'll go get the book, but did Rebbe say Yavin Kamashmo? I missed it.
I guess not. Yavin Kamashmo. Two of us say Beitunaki. Thank you. Okay. Meshech refers to Musia. Okay, so that's clearly Mysia, and that appears a lot in history. That was actually the Greeks had had a lot of power over Mysia. I'm assuming that's what it means. Tiras, so here's where we get to the issue. Tiras, which is the youngest, Pligiba Rabbi Simoi Verabonan, some say it was Rabbi Simon Verabonan. So one says that Tiras is Beit Tiraiki, and one says that Tiras actually refers to Poras. Tiraiki sounds very much like Thraiki today, which is Greek for Thrace, with the English Thrace. So it's probably, I would imagine, it's the same thing. Okay, so that's, again, that's around Bulgaria. Fine, but the important thing is Tani Rav Yosef, in a Braisa, that Tiras is Poras. So, okay, if that's the way that we're coming out, that Tiras is Poras, then it makes sense what Rabbi Yochanan said, that Yaftali in the Yefet, that even though Yefet rebuilt the Beis HaMikdash through Tiras, nonetheless, the Shechina is shared only in the Eyal HaShem. Once we're already talking about the children of Yefet, so now we also bring the children of some of the other Umais. Let's talk about Cush. So Cush's sons, Cush himself obviously comes directly from Cham. He was the Bechor. So among B'nai Cush, it says Safta, Ra'ama, V'Safticha. So what exactly are those today? So Tani Rav Yosef, this refers to Sakistan Gavaita, V'Sakistan Baraita. Notice how that sounds with the Stan idea. It sounds very much like Afghanistan, right? So Sakistan. But that's because the idea of Satan actually is a general word that means a country. So in terms of the reference of Sakistan, that's a word that occurs in Persian. And therefore it could be, maybe that's why we move on to it over here, because the stan ending is a Persian word for the country of. So Sakistan are two, there are two Sakistans. There's the Sakistan Gavaita and the Sakistan Baraita. There's outside Sakistan and inside Sakistan. We don't know where this is, as far as I know. But Ben Chora L'Chora Mea Parsi, the Kefa Alpha Parsi. So Rashi identifies this as two mountain ranges. One is called Safta, one is called Saftecha, which makes sense because that's the way we would have called an inner and an outer, one surrounding the other. So one surrounds the other. The outside was one was called Sakistan outside. The inside one was called Sakistan inside. The distance between one, obviously we're, you know, pretending it's a perfect circle. So the distance between the inner circle and the outer circle, the circle being defined by a mountain range, is a distance of 100 parsaot. Maybe these are craters of some kind. I'm not familiar with where it would be. And the circumference of the outside crater, the outside mountain range, was 1,000 parsaot. Then we go on to talk about Nimrod, once we started talking about Kush. So in the beginning, Nimrod was the king, before he conquered everything, he was the king of these four places. What are these four places? So Bavel is meant the way it's meant today. Kemashma, that's Bavel, the general area of what we call Babylonia. Erech, Arak is Orichut. This Orichut, again, I'll assume, but Barnea will correct me, if it's not Uruk. Uruk, which is the, I mean, I'm assuming Urikus sounds very much like Uruk, which was the big city, basically, on the Euphrates. Maybe it relates back to Ur Kasdim. So these are like Ur cities. Akkad refers to Baskar, so that's Akkadia. Fine. This could be also, so this could be close to Turkey. And Kalne refers to Nofer Ninfi. Now, Nofer Ninfi is not clear what that means. Nofer probably, I mean, it sounds very much like Nippur. Does that make sense, Barnea? So then it would now be in Iraq. So Ninfi is not clear where that comes from. There's a name of a god that's called Ninfi, Nini. Maybe it's that. Okay, again, it's amazing how all of these places were once like such famous places that the Gemara could refer to. It would be like saying that's New York, you know, or that's Rome. And today it's like nobody has the slightest idea what you're talking about. That's how much these great and grand empires mean. It doesn't take much time to be totally forgotten. Okay, so then the Gemara continues being Deresh, the Psukim in Bereshis, because over there we saw, we talked about Nimrod, and it says, Minaret Sahi Yatsa Ashur. So Ashur, as Rashi explains over there, that Ashur left the area because they wanted to get away from Nimrod. And they saw that Nimrod was being chaylek on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ashur comes from shame. So they didn't want to be part of that merida, says Rashi. That's based on the Medrash. It's because they left that area. So what is that referring to? So Tony Rav Yosef, Ashur, obviously Ashur in general means Assyria, which later on. Then we're talking about Silik, I'm assuming it refers to Seleucia. Tell me if I'm wrong, Barnea. Vayiven es Nineveh, vesrechovos ir veskola. Okay, so Nineveh, we know where Nineveh is. That's basically Mosul, or right across from Mosul today. Actually got back into the news fairly recently, Mosul. Got back into the news. And then Rehovos Ir, that refers to Prat de Meshan, and Kolach refers to Prat de Bursif. So this would be, again, Bursif, there is such a town, it's called Bursif, or Bursipa. So this would be Poraz, would be Prat, would be a reference to the Nahar Prat, because Bursipa is a Nahar Prat. So I'm assuming, since the Gemara says that Bursif and Bavel got flipped, the names got flipped, B'meshach HaDorot, so they must be two cities that are right next to each other, two areas right next to each other, Bursif and Bavel. Remember, Bursif was talking about, like, the Gemara made fun of it. It's like a pit where everybody that's a mamzer has got psul yichus ended up going to Bursif. Okay, and then we have the et resen, Bein Nineveh uben Kolach, hi ha'ir ha'gdola. Now, it's not very clear when the Torah says hi ha'ir ha'gdola what it's referring to. One thing is for sure, it's not referring to Kolach, because if it was referring to Kolach, it would have said that resen, Bein Nineveh uben Kolach ha'ir ha'gdola, right? So if it refers hi ha'ir ha'gdola, then it's a pronoun referring either back to resen or to Nineveh. That the Gemara is going to discuss, but this is, as Tosus points out, the use of the pronoun makes it clear that Ir HaGdolah is not a reference to Kolach. That's for sure. Okay, So then what are we referring to? First of all, the cities. So Resen actually refers to Ktesiphon. Ktesiphon probably almost 100% is Ktesiphon without the A, because we, in Aramaic, you always add an A to the beginning instead of having a difficult pronunciation of the beginning of a city. So, but the Ktesiphon became Ktesiphon, which is a famous, that's a famous city near Baghdad. So we don't know when it says Hi Ha'ir HaGdolah, if it's a reference to Nineveh being the Ir HaGdolah, or if it's a reference to Resen being the Ir HaGdolah, because it's a pronoun referring back to one of the aforementioned two cities before we talked about Kelach. Which one is it? Ah, Kishomer. There we get our answer when we get to the book of Yonah. There it says, V'ninveh haita ir gedolah l'Elohim, ma'alech shloshet yamim. So the only city that we refer to as Ha'ir HaGedolah is Ninveh Ha'ir HaGedolah. Ha've'omer Ninveh hi Ha'ir HaGedolah, which probably means, in terms of the Torah's early reference to Ir HaGedolah at this point, which usually is a foreshadowing of history, in the context of Ashur's moving away, it makes a great deal of sense that that would be why Yonah as the Ir, Ninveh as the Ir HaGedolah is a reference to Teshuvah, ultimately, and becomes the Makor of Teshuvah because of this early beginnings of trying to avoid the original Ra and the Elam that came from Nimrod. Okay. Then, once we're talking about various names, we also have Remuzim in names, and this is, of course, not really related to the names here, but because of the fact that this turns out to be the Shemais that come later on in Kiryat Arba, so we talk about when Kolev went to Hebron, it says, V'shom Achiman Sheshai V'tamai Yilidei Ha'anak. So the children of the big giant, which later on is identified in Yoshua as Arba, the name of the Avi Ha'anak was Arba. So because of that, Kiryat Arba was the town that he apparently had built, and his children were the brothers Achiman Sheshai and Talmai. So what are these funny names? So Achiman obviously is a reference to Achi, reference to the brother who is Man. Man means he's the most prepared, the most miyuman, and he must have been the most strong. So he was miyuman sheba Achim. Sheshai is the same Russian as Runation, and he's called Sheshai because he's meisim et ha'aretz kishchitot. He, by walking around, he wrecks the ground. Because we call that Hasheit Vashever. So Sheit Sheshai Shin, as Rashi says over here, is the only letter that's the Shoresh there in that word, and it has to do with destruction. Talmai also is a reference to the earth, the impact that he had on the earth, but over here it's a less destructive impact because it's called Tlamim. So Talmai, when you actually dig a Telem with your plow, so the telem, the furrow, is called a telem. And I guess he used to drag his feet because he made tlamim instead of shritut. So I guess it's a difference whether you're wearing Nike or whether you're wearing some kind of, football cleats, whether you're called Sheshai or Talmai. But anyway, they had a different impact on the ground. Now this word davar acher makes absolutely no sense. Even Rashi takes it out, and certainly all of the other Gersos don't have it, so skip the davar acher. Achiman is not related. Once we're talking about the Achiman, you should just know that Achiman built the town of Anas, Sheshai built the town of Alush, and Talmai built the town of Talbush, and who knows where exactly these were. Do you have anything? Let me just finish this bit here. But Yelidei Anak, why do they call them Anak? Same reason we call skyscrapers skyscrapers. Obviously, it's sort of a ridiculous exaggeration, but the idea is you want to talk about a very, very tall building, so it looks like they're scraping the sky. So you want to talk about these tall football players, so you want to call them the Anak Shemanikim Achama Bekomatan. So this is the equivalent of our skyscraper. They were sunscrapers, meaning that they used to wear the sun around their neck as a decoration on their necklaces. So the those who were necklaced by the sun. So that's the Ha'anak. Okay, beautiful. Anyway, do you have any information for us, Rabbanea, that is better than any of the stuff that I don't know? Are you planning to respond?
I just say name of like southern Turkey in that area, and maybe that's a better fit than Seleucid. And I want to tell you something else. Kilikia.
Okay.
Sorry, I don't remember, but that's the one.
All right, so let's continue then. Om Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Omar Rabbi. Now that we've discussed the interesting relationship of the building of Yefet, of the Beis HaMikdash, and the relationship that has to the lack of the presence of the Shechina in the Beis HaMikdash, Rabbi Yeshua says that, listen, you should know that Atida Romi Shetipol Biyad Poras. In the end, Rome will fall to the Ayatollahs. Oh, Lord help us. But we'll end up not like this, so it's okay. Shenema. Lechein Shimu Atzat Hashem Asher Ya'atz El Edom. U'machshavotav Asher Chashav El Yoshvei Timan. Im Lo Yischavum Tzirei Atzon. Im Lo Yashim Alayhem Nevehem. So this is telling us that, as Yirmiyahu says, you should know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plans of his revenge against Edom are very, very far in the future. But ultimately, his plans are against Edom, against Teman itself. He was a grandchild of Esau. So they're going to be wiped out, dragged off by the Tzirei Hatzon. And that Tzirei Hatzon is a reference to Poras. Matkifla Rabba Barula. So Rabba Barula did not like Rebbe's explanation. Why would you say that Tzirei Hatzon is a reference to Poras? I mean, I'm assuming that that's because of the way that Daniel saw the future and various nations and Malchios were represented in his visions by various animals. So the one that was Etzon was the Baal HaKarnaim, was the Ayo. The Ayo Baal HaKarnaim was a simon, was said to Daniel Beferish, that this ram that you saw that had such powerful horns was a reference to the kings of Modai and Poras. So therefore, you're calling them the Tzirei Hatzon. I'm assuming, I don't know why else you would call them Tzirei Hatzon, but if that's the case, how do you know that it's a reference to Poras? It could very well be a actual reference to Yovan, because Daniel also has this Hatzafir Hasair Melach Yavan. He saw this goat, this he-goat, and he called it the king of Yavan, in which case maybe it means, which sounds a lot more reasonable to me, maybe it means, Tainas Rabba Barula, it's a reference to Greek and the wars of Greek and Rome, Greece and Rome, and that in the end, that they will be defeated by the Greeks. Why would you say it's a reference to Persia? So when Rav Chaviva Bar Surmaki, when he left Eretz Yisrael, and when he left Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, he was solid. He went up. So Amra Kameda Umi Rabbana. So he tainted Rabba Barula's taina to a certain, we don't know who it is, and said that Rebbe doesn't seem to have a real basis for this. Omar Lei. So in Eretz Yisrael, they laughed at these stupid people back there. So we don't even know who it was, but he said to him, you know, it's a hell of a chutzpah. Mandelo yadek rushe kroi, mosif tiyuftel Rebbe. The guy doesn't even know how to read a pasuk, and he's asking questions on Rebbe. I mean, it's like unbelievable, stupid people with a lot of chutzpah. The meaning of Tzirei Hatzon has absolutely nothing to do with any kind of visions or references to Elim and horns and Zafir and goats. Please, Tzirei Hatzon used in the pasuk is simply a metaphor. Zutra de Achoi. The meaning of Sireat, so it's like what you usually call the kids. Don't you call the kids today? Yes. It's the youngest of the kids. So meaning it's the littlest child in the playroom. That's all that it means, the kids. And that's a reference to Tani Rav Yosef, Tiras Zuporas. That's why we brought all this in here. So since Tiras was the youngest one of the children of Yefet, and we said that's Poras, so what the reference was in the pasuk of Yeshayahu is that the youngest kid, meaning Persia, is going to end up dragging away room. Omar Rabba Bar Bachana, Om Rabbi Yochan, Mishum Rabbi Yudah Bar Rabbi Eloi. Absolutely, that makes so much sense, because Rome should fall to Persia. Why? Because it's a Kal Vachomer. If the Beis HaMikdash HaRishon, which was built by Shlomo HaMelech and Bnei Shem, who destroyed that Beis HaMikdash? The Bavliim. So Yichrivu Kastiim, right? So these Kastiim, what happened to them? The Kastiim were taken over by the Parsiim in the end. And that was an indication of the Nikmas Hashem, that they fell first in the hands of Madai and then into the hands of Poras through Koresh. So doesn't it make sense that the Migdash Sheni that Poras actually built, I mean, over there, Poras were just being used as an agency of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's vengeance over the Kastim. But then they went out and built the Beis HaMikdash. So Koshikain, the people that came and destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, which is Edom, for sure should fall into the hands of the ones that actually built it, besides the ones who seem to be in general being the ones in charge of taking revenge against those who are Machir of the Beis HaMikdash, like they did with Bava. So it's obviously Ein Din that the Mikdash Sheni Shebena'u Parsiim Vechrivu Romim, that for sure the Persians in the end are going to destroy the Romans. Shiplu Romim Biat Parsiim. So I guess Iran has to get its bomb. On my Rav, it's not true. Atida Paras Shetipol Biad Romi. Just the opposite. Persia will end up falling into the hands of the West. Omrolei Rav Kahanev, Rav Asil, Rav Rebbe, doesn't make sense. You're going to say, Banuye Biad Seture. The ones who built the Beis HaMikdash should fall into the hands of the one who destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. Said Rav, that's the way it is. In Yezeras Melechi, this is a gzera from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that is the way history is going to play out. Ikeri Amri, and others say that Rav said to them, Inunami o kasatri b'kadishta, look, you know, it's all very nice to call them builders. Yeah. So they built one building because of whatever political issues were involved, and then they stopped that also. Not to mention the fact that they built it bedafka with an area that could be burned so that it could be destroyed, because that was the whole story, that they made the base over there out of wood so that it wasn't really impregnable. And besides that, it's really nice to call them builders. Now, let me give you a list of all of the Bate Knessiot that they destroyed. Each one of those Bate Knessiot is called a Migdash Ma'at. So, you know, that we don't hold against them. We remember like one issue in history. And what's the matter? Of course, they're also called Sosri. Tanya Namiyachi and Abraita actually supports Rabbinus. Atida Paras Shetipo Biadromi. First of all, it makes sense because Sasri Beiknishta, they're also called Sotrim. And Od Gzerat Melachu, but in terms of the actual relationship of the Beis HaMikdash, the bonim of the Beis HaMikdash that was not a true Beis HaMikdash should fall into the hands of the Sotrim. The Omer of Yehuda Amar Rav, so this is a mistake because it has nothing to do with the Omer. Although, I mean, you could say some have the Omer. You could say that it must mean, it's a reference to, must mean that in the end, Rome has to be Sholeit over Poras. So then it would work out with the de Omer. But okay, it's different yourselves. Ein ben David ba, so Mashiach doesn't show up. Ad shetifshot malchut Romi harsha'a b'chol ha'olam kulo tisha chodashim. There has to be an accepted Western civilization that rules over the entire world for 9 whole months. Shenemar lachein yitneim ad eit yoleda yalada v'yeter achav yeshuvan abnei Yisrael. So this is a reference to Mashiach's coming. And then, so what happens is that we have these 9 months of Tsar where the Mashiach is unable to actually be shaylit. And so because of this, the going back to the womb, which is probably a reference to the original discussion in the womb between Yaakov and Esav, so that Esav should be given the Shlita and Olam Hazeh the way he was promised, the deal that was made in the womb was, so then for 9 months, that will be the period that they'll have a complete Shlita. And then Mashiach, together with the other Shvatim, Yeter Echav, first Shevet Yehuda, will come back together with the rest of Bnei Yisrael.
Okay. Rebbe? Rebbe, two things?
Yeah.
One is that the battles between the Greeks and the Persians start well before Alexander, and in some of the writings, I'm not an expert in this, but it seems to me that Greek identity was formed. We're all fighting for Hellas in the struggle against Persia. So it's back and forth, you know, for several centuries.
It's the whole battle of the West against us.
Yafeh. And second of all, just on Nineveh, that is the Assyrian capitals moved, different emperors moved where they were. Sancheriv had Nineveh, and then his grandson Ashurbanipal builds Nineveh, and Nahum is describing Nineveh falling. The pinnacle of Assyrian power and height is expressed in Nineveh, and then Nineveh falls. So, I mean, that's the opposite of Tshuva. That's like, you know, when they reached the total evil, Shevet Api, and then they were got wiped out. But the fall of Nineveh in 612, Assyria fell several years later in retreat. So Nineveh is even, it's interesting, even more a symbol of Ashur than the city Ashur is.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Anyway, getting back now to Lishkas Pahet. So, Tonu Rabban, Kol HaLishakot Shehayu B'Migdash Lo Haya Lahem Mezuzah Chutz MiLishkat Parhedrin. In general, the Lishakot were not Chayev in a Mezuzah because they were not a Mokam Dira. But the Lishkas Parhedrin, since Shehaya Badir LeKohen Gadol, since, as we learned in our Mishnah, we have a base Dira LeKohen Gadol, so because of that, you had to put a Mezuzah on the Lishkas Parhedrin. To which Rabbi Yehuda said, Halor kama l'shakot ayu b'migdash, shayalem beit dirah, v'lo yalem mezuzah. Listen, there's a lot of different places in the Beis HaMikdash where there was all of the shmira in the Mikdash, where they slept there at night and everything, but they didn't have a mezuzah. So why should there be a mezuzah on Lishkas Parhedrin? So it's not really true. The Lishkas Parhedrin, not as you're claiming, that it's chayiv in a mezuzah because it's a real Beis Dira. It's not a real Beis Dira. It is a gzeira, as we'll see, that they put it there min rabbanan, but it's not really chayev in a mezuzah. So Tosfos asks the obvious question, what about Lishkas Beis HaEved, which was for the Paraduma? That should be the full equivalent of the Lishkas Parhedrin. So Tosfos, Lishitos, has got no problem. This, remember, we had way back at the beginning of Al Pnei HaBira. So if you hold that the Bira is a Mokum Hoya in the Harabayit, and that's what Tosfos understands, according to that, the idea of Lishka, the Lishka's Beis HaEved, was that it wasn't really in the Lishakot of the Azorah. It was in the Harabayit. So we're not talking about that. We're talking about Kol HaLishakot Shehayu Sham. We're referring to Beis HaMikdash Guf. But Rashi understands that it's in the actual wall of the Azorah. So this gives another answer, that the idea over there is that there's no particular time. I mean, look, you know, it might have been 100 years till they'll make the next Paraduma, right? I'm going to call that a Beis Dira because once in 100 years, somebody lives there. Masha'inkin, the Lishkas Parhedrin, which is a Mokum Kavua every single year as a Beis Dira for the Kohen Gadol, that would be called a Beis Dira. So therefore, we didn't ask here from the Lishkas Beis HaEved, we only asked from Kama Lishakot, which includes, the way Rashi understands it, the Shakot of the Shmira. Anyway, so what is basically Rebbe Yehuda's Svara that you don't need Bnei Raisa? Why not? Oh, my Rabba, because Rebbe Yehuda ko bayit she'enu atzri lebot ha'chamav limot ha'gishamim eno bayit. If this is not a home that is meant to be used year-round, then it's a vacation home. A vacation home is not chayev in a mezuzah, unless it's basically winterized and you can use it. You go on vacation during the winter and during the summer, that's one thing. But if it's only used once a week, once a year for a week, that's not called a home. Esrei Abaya, Tanya Zabaya, that's not true. It says beferish in the Pasuk, in a reference to vacation homes, it says in Amos, Vehi Keti Beit HaChoref al Beit HaKayetz, referring to vacation homes. So I'm going to smash even the Beit HaChoref on the Beit HaKayetz. So these are for the snowbirds who go to Florida. So that's their Beit HaChoref. And then they've got their Alpine homes in the Kayetz. I'll smash them all. Said Rabbi, exactly. Do you see them being called Bayit? No. They have an adjective built in. They're identified as a Beit HaChoref or a Beit HaKayetz. Yes. Not their ikri. All I'm saying is al mezuzot beitecha does not say al mezuzot beitecha u beit chorefecha u beit katzecha. So it has to be on Mizuzot Beitecha that is Stam, and that has to be Beit Stam Aloikra, that's be year-round house. Says Abaya, it's still not true. Because take a look at the Mishnah in Ma'asrot. Sukkas Achag Bechag, Rabbi Yehuda Mechayev. The issue over there was Maisra. So remember, Bi'arti HaKodesh Bin HaBayit means that the Bayit is Koveil HaMaisra. So once you bring something into the house, you're no longer allowed to eat from it in even Arai. So it has to be taken off Maisra before you're allowed to munch on it without being Koveil HaSuda. So the question is a sukkah, during sukkahs, is it considered to be a Bayit in terms of Maisra or not? So Rabbi Yehuda says, yes, it absolutely is. And if you bring your wheat into the sukkah, you're not allowed to do anything with it to take off Trumas Maisers. Whereas the Chachomim say, no, it's not considered to be a bais. But Tony Allah, now the Braisa explains that not only does Rabbi Yehuda hold that a sukkah zachag bechag is considered to be a bais for Maiser, but there's a Braisa that says he considers it to be a bais for everything, Erev. So let's say it's Shabbos and there's a sukkah that belongs to one person and there's other people that have a home, then he has to be part of the Erev in the Chatzar. He's not allowed to carry. For a mezuzah, he's chayev. For making it meiser, chayev and meiser, to be not allowed to eat anymore, he's mechayev. It's koveil meiser. So that's exact opposite. So then that means that Rabbi Yehuda is saying on the contrary, that a diras that is not a dira all year round, obviously that's all pointed to sukkah, and nonetheless, he says, it is considered to be a house. How are you saying over here that the reason Lishkas Pahedron doesn't have a mezuzah, you're saying is because it's basically like a sukkah. But really, you know, the sukkah is chayim. And if you try to tell me, yes, but remember the Rabbi Yehuda agreed that Lishkas Pahedron is chayim in Rabbanan because of a gezerah. So maybe it's the same gezerah. And maybe what Rabbi Yehuda was saying over here by sukkah was that the sukkah is chayim in Maiser min Rabbanan. What makes you think that he's saying a contradiction to what he says over here? Maybe he's saying exactly the same thing. So if he tell me, he'll tell me he only means that it's min rabbanan. Look, you can be mechayev a sukkah in an erev, and you can be mechayev a sukkah in a mezuzah, min rabbanan, but you cannot be mechayev a sukkah in meiser min rabbanan. Why? Because meiser mi'ikal meimar min rabbanan, that would be a disaster to make it min rabbanan. Because if you did, how would people be able to differentiate between a chiyav meiser d'oraisa and a chiyav meiser d'rabbanan in this case? There would be nothing at all that would point to a difference. And if they don't know the difference, then they're going to come to doing disastrous things because they'll assume that it's all a chiyav. So they'll take off from this d'rabbanan chiyav on something which is a d'oraisa chiyav, thinking it's all d'oraisa. And of course, it would leave it as Tevel Gomor because it wasn't really Chayev and Meiser, and vice versa. They'll take off what they think is Meiser from something that's really Chayev and Meiser on this, which is not Chayev and Meiser, which will leave the Meiser as Tevel because it never became Meiser in terms of its other Chayuvim. That's crazy. Now, Tosis points out, understand, we have so many cases where the Rabbanim were Gozer. They were always, what about Demai? I mean, Demai is like the biggest gezerah in the world, right? And you're constantly taking off Trumas and Maisras. It's something that's not really Chayav Trumas and Maisras. Says Tosas, yes, but you don't take off Truma Gedayla. That itself reminds people, this can't be Deraisa. Not only that, you don't give, you maybe your Mafresh, but you don't give away your Maisarishon. You don't give it away. You don't give away your Maisarani. So obviously people will know. The same thing is true in other cases, the things that you bring from a goy. Things that you bought from a goy, maybe chayim and rabbanan. Nobody's going to confuse that with normal growth. And he asks from other cases. He shows that in each case, it's clearly in people's mind a derabbanan. But if we would be gozer, the din of bias, who's going to think that the din of bias is itself a gezer derabbanan? Nobody will know that. So therefore, it's impossible to say that he was gozer. Therefore, I disagree, and it means that Rabbi Yehuda holds midiraisa, even if it's not a house that's used all year round, it's chayev, and therefore the Lishkas Fahedron should not be any different than a sukkah. Therefore, says Abaya, I think Rabbi has it completely wrong. Elam Abaya, the Omachlokas, he understood wrong. Actually, during the Shivas Yomim of the time in which the Kohen Gadol is there, of course that's chayev midiraisa, and Rabbi Yehuda agrees to that. You do need a mezuzah. That isn't what we're discussing over here. In the discussion that we just had in the Machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan about Lishkas Farhedrin, we were talking about Lishkas Farhedrin all year round. That the Rabbanan hold that actually we want the Lishkas Farhedrin to have a mezuzah all year round. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda holds Logazrina. So since he's only there for a month, at this point, this is what we think. Later on, we're going to fix it. At this point, we think that, okay, if we're only going to have it there when the Kohen Gadol comes, so we're just going to get used to the idea that this is the way the Lishka is. The Kohen Gadol moves in and never cursed anybody. Now we have to put on a mezuzah. So, okay, so it goes there because of that fact. We'll keep the mezuzah on it all year round. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, I agree. Of course, you're believing a mezuzah. But we're not chayish that you're not going to leave the mezuzah. You're not going to put a mezuzah on. But we'll see that there was a gezerah. Because Rabbi Yehuda says, but I agree there is a gezerah. What is that gezerah? That later on we're going to see is the gezerah that we do not want people to think that the Kohen Gadol is in prison. And since the halacha is that if it's a dira bal korcha, that's what we're going to get to, that's not chayav in a mezuzah. So we don't leave a mezuzah there all year round. So people will say, what is this? Isn't this a house? Doesn't the Kohen Gadol live here? Of course not. He's brought into jail here. So they drag him out of his house, and here he lives in jail. That's how Rashi understands it. Tosu has a totally different approach, according to which we're talking about the Sukkah Sachag, and that people are going to think that the Sukkah Sachag is a jail, which is a bizoyant HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we should look at his mitzvahs as a jail. And because of that, he's Mechayev in the Sukkah Sechag. Completely different approach with different yourselves. We'll take Rashi's approach over here. Okay. So according to Abaya, it turns out that Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanakama are made that during the time that the Shivas Yomim that Kohen was there, it's Chayev Midiraisa. And the only question is it Chayev year-round? How do you come up with such a pshat? The Sukkah, it says, Dafka was talking about during the 7 days when you are in the Sukkah. And that's where we found the Machlokas. And it says over there that it's Potter from a mezuzah, according to the Rabbanan. Now, obviously, Abaya must told that these Rabbanan have no shaykh as that Rabbanan, because otherwise he should have said, you know, the Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbi Yehuda, Kasha, the Rabbanan, the Rabbanan, low Kasha, as Tosis points out. Fine. But it could very well be that he held, I don't need to worry, I'm not there. That who knows, it's the same people. Those, the Baal Machlokas and Rabbi Yehuda has to be the Rabbanan, and with the Lishkas Farhedrin has to be the same Rabbanan as the Chag. Okay, but anyway, Rava holds yes, you have to explain the whole thing. And since it says over there that it's Partim and a mezuzah, and you claim it's Chayav and a mezuzah, that everybody's made of that, certainly during those 7 days it's Chayav and a mezuzah. So therefore, I say a completely different pshat, okay? I say, Elamar Rava, on the contrary, everybody is made of that Kulei Alma, B'shar Yimot HaShana, Kulei Alma L'Pligi D'Ptura. The Lishkas Farhedrin is certainly putter from a mezuzah mi'ikar ad-din. So the question is whether there is a chiyav during the 7 days. And that's a question about the sukkah as well. However, they are completely different questions. I'll explain to you why. It happens to be that the issue at stake in the Machlokas about Sukkah during the 7 days has zero in common with the Machlokas about Lishkas Farhedrin during the 7 days. So they're two completely different Machlokas in Sukkah time Lachud, Lishka time Lachud, and let me explain to you what the difference is. When it comes to Sukkah, there's an obvious reason for the Machlokas, because we know that there's a Machlokas all over about whether a Sukkah is allowed to be a diras kva. So that means, since Rabbi Yehuda holds that a sukkah could be a diras kva, remember the beginning of Masechet Sukkot, so Rabbi Yehuda says, doesn't matter how big, how tall you make that sukkah, because a sukkah is perfectly okay as a normal residence, which means that we don't identify a sukkah as a sukkah as a binyan arai, in which case it's a regular house. So why in the world wouldn't I be mechayev in the mezuzah? That's the reason that they're arguing over there. The Rabbanan hold that Sukkah is actually, has to be the Rabbanan the Tamayo, that Sukkah is Diras Arai Bina. And a Sukkah, which is a Diras Arai, therefore is not considered to be a bias. And it's not Mechuyim in a Mezuzah, which has nothing to do with the Lishkas Farhedrin. I mean, the Lishkas Farhedrin was about as kavu as you could get. I mean, it's like serious building, right? So that has nothing to do with Lishka's Vayedrin. Now, as far as the question about Lishka's Vayedrin is concerned, Lishka has a completely different issue. Lishka time alachut. Rabbanan Savrik Dira Baal Korchash Madira. So Rabbanan hold that even though the Kohen Gadol was dragged into there, out of his house, and his wife's not allowed to come. I mean, this is not really the way that people would live in their home. And nonetheless, it's considered to be a dira. So maybe you want to call it a jail cell. It does have a mezuzah. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda Savar, Dira Baal Korcha is not considered to be a home. And it's Lav Shma Dira. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda said, basically, there's been no reason to have a mezuzah on the Lishka's Farhedrin in the same way that we don't have a mezuzah on any of the Lishakot that had a Beit Dira. So what? So there's guards that have to sleep there? They'd rather be at home, I guarantee you. So if that's the case, why would they be mechuyav in a mezuzah? So why then did we put a mezuzah on the door of the Lishka's Farhedrin? That was minarabonanu de takinula. Shelo yomru kohen gadol chavush bebeit ha'tzurin. So basically, that's the whole point. I hold that there would be no mezuzah there. But the reason that there would be no mezuzah there is that everybody would say, how come there's no mezuzah? Ah, yeah, because really the Kohen Gadol isn't here out of his own volition. We've dragged him in there. And this is so much part of the way that people had misperceptions about the Kohen Gadol. So because of that, we made certain that there was a mezuzah there so that nobody would be able to say that there's a forcible taking the Kohen Gadol into a place that he doesn't want it. Fine. As far as Tosfos's issue about why don't we consider the sukkah to be a dira ba'al korcha, I mean, that obviously there's a difference between a dira that you have to stay in and a dira that you can stay in when you want to stay in a dira. So, I mean, there's a tremendous difference between Lishka's Farhedrin and a sukkah. Not to mention the fact that the sukkah, when you do live in it, you live in it the way you live in a normal home. You bring your wife and you bring your kids and whatever. The Lishka's Farhedrin, he wasn't allowed to live in the way that he lives in his own homes. That, basically, the Acharonim explained, that wasn't even an issue to Rashi, even though according to Tosfos, that was the discussion here.